Hey, welcome to Startup Chats with your host, Ben Parry. This is a little cheeky number that was recorded a couple years ago now. Now, forgive me, it was never published. And embarrassingly, this was with one of my very good buddies, Harry Kaliminos. So huge apologies to Harry, but he has sort of forgiven me because we did publish it on the YouTube. And he's a good buddy, so he'll understand. But this is a little bit of content that I'm trying to get some of my old bits that I haven't got around to publishing yet, so I'm going to sporadically sort of pop them in now and again, along with the new episodes where I interview the founders of startups to share some great insights. But the great thing about some of this old content is it's still very applicable to now, and Harry shares some really great insights with his business and mentality and mindset and things like that. So I hope you enjoy and get tons of value from the podcast. So as usual, guys, don't forget to like, subscribe, and give us a review. That'd be amazing. But otherwise, I'll see you on the other side. Hey everyone, it's Ben Parry. Welcome to the Ben Parry Podcast Experience. Today I'm really excited to have my very good friend, Harry Kaliminos from The Thought Gym. So I've been dying to get Harry down here to Devon to do a podcast session with me. So finally persuaded him to get his ass down here. And we're just going to chat, and he's going to share his story about what he does and his challenges, his successes. Amazing stuff. I'm super, you know, sort of stoked to be a good friend of Harry's. He's a super, super talented guy. And we sort of met years ago, didn't we, when we were traveling.
18 years ago now?
Crazy. 2000, yeah, back in the day.
2000 as
Sydney Olympics.
As guests on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Well, that's where we met.
Yeah, but it was Sydney Olympics that was going on then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So thanks for finally... doing the podcast, mate.
Pleasure to be here, be interviewed on my mate's podcast. It's always good.
Awesome. So, yeah, so tell us about us. I mean, for those obviously who don't know about you, obviously the Thought Gym is your thing.
Yeah. So
just tell us all about it. Well, I tell you what, start from the beginning. Tell us how you went from that journey from you know, employment to doing your thing.
Okay, so I'll just explain to people watching or listening that I am a mindset, resilience, health and well-being coach, speaker and trainer. So what that means is, in short, I like to help people become superhuman. This is like my little Superman top that I've got on here. So everything's about becoming a better version of yourself. So imagine yourself on your best day and then 10x-ing that and being like that. It's not going to be 10 days out of 10, but like 8 or 9 days out of 10 rather than once in a while. So everything I do is about how do you do that? So what's the mindset that you need? What kind of other practicalities that you need? And everything I've been pursuing the last decade has been to help increase my life in some way, but also those of like my clients or coaches, coaching clients or organizations that I work for. So I go into organizations and I train their staff, I train their executives on how to improve their performance by first what I call becoming their best selves. Okay, so it's a leadership training, if you like, but rather than a lot of leadership training focusing on, I guess, some of the tools and techniques around leading other people, what I like to focus on is thinking, if you want to be the best leader that you can be, whether you're an entrepreneur leading a team of 3 or 4 people or leading a team of 250 people, you first have to be the best self-leader you can be. And we're all leaders. Even if you're a solopreneur out there listening or a student, we still have to lead ourselves, you know, whether that's deciding what we're going to do for uni or what we're going to eat for lunch, or whether we're going to be the best brother, mother, whatever it is out there, we've got to be our best self leaders. And so what I teach them is about how do you become the best self leader. And if you want to be the best self leader you can be, I believe you've got to optimize yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And so the framework and the model that I've developed addresses that, and that really came about through observing high performing individuals across a range of industries, deciding to make changes to my own life and noticing that, you know, my focus, my productivity, my relationships, my energy, my health, everything increased. And I was already quite energized as a person compared to most of my friends, but it just became even better. And so that's the kind of the end point, but to go back to your original bit of where it all started. Mm. So I used to work, well, through a number of different jobs, law firms, pubs, etc. Then I ended up working for Accenture, big management consultancy at the London Stock Exchange, so a big financial institution. And I was working there for 6 years, did a number of different roles there, service management, project management, even operational work, working shifts, so did a bunch of different things. And then financial crisis hit 2008. They started making redundancies around then, but there was always change going on. In 2010, I finally got made redundant, although most of my team did, I didn't, and eventually I had to kind of fight for it because I actually wanted to leave because I was waiting. I guess maybe like some of the listeners, watchers out there, if you are waiting to start that business, waiting to make that leap, and you're waiting for the sign from God or whoever it is to tell you this is the time, it never came really. And then I thought, actually...
But it never does.
It never does. So I thought, well, if ever there was an opportunity for a sign, it was this redundancy thing. So I took redundancy and I was like, what am I going to do? And I was interested in personal development, NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, which is a tool of psychology tools, I guess you could call it, for understanding how the brain, how we think or how we make decisions, how we get to where we got to. It's about 40, 50 years old, and it's kind of stolen or borrowed from a number of different modalities. So I got interested in that, went to a course on that.
What made you get interested into that in that side of things? Was there a moment, or was it just...
There was always a moment. No, there was a moment. I read a book in 2006, which mentioned the word NLP. And I was like, what? There are ways that you can, say, change food cravings, like, in an instant, you know, by changing the way that you picture it in your head, or that you can... And at its root, NLP is also about modelling. So it's about seeing someone who's doing something well and then modelling their behaviours. Yeah. And replicating that. And I was like, there is basically ways to shortcut things, whether you're afraid of spiders. Yeah. People cure phobias of spiders in 15 minutes rather than...
Because obviously I know you very well, and you've got a very sort of inquisitive mind, haven't you? And sort of analytical mind. And so was that the thing that grabbed you? It was like, oh, I want to just analyse this a bit more. I want to understand this a bit more.
I just thought, you know what? I guess this is where... And the whole superhuman... label came many years later, but everything I look to do is to help make me a better person. I thought this is a selection of tools that I think would be useful to know. And so I read lots of books, and there's only so much you can do by reading and watching videos and all that, and sometimes you've got to go to a live experience to kind of have it. And so that wasn't until 2010 that I did my course, but 2006 was when I first came across NLP. I started reading about it.
So it was all about personal, wanting personal development for yourself.
Yeah, it was. And then I went to the NLP course and they started talking about, when you're doing this with your clients. And I was thinking, what clients? I haven't got any clients. I'm not planning to be a coach or anything like that. I'm planning just to use this for my own self-betterment. And then they were like, oh, you know, then you've got to niche in your business and you've got to do this. And I was like, and then I thought, okay, well, maybe I can help people, because you know, when you learn something, you know, you're giving advice to people because you've spent the time doing things and you've got the shortcuts now that can help people save money, save time. You want to share it, or at least I wanted to share it. So I was like, okay, maybe I should be coaching people. And I knew, and that
sowed the seed.
And then I was like, well, I've always been into fitness. So, and I was thinking, well, you know what, people always struggle with their health and their fitness goals, and why is that? And I was like, well, it became really obvious to me that it's because people are always trying to change behaviours, but not the mindset that drives the behaviour in the first place. And you're doomed to repeat the same patterns if you keep trying to join the gym in January, give up every February, you know, you start a new diet, 6 weeks later you fail, because it's going to be hard, because your mind is still thinking as exercise is boring, or eating healthy is bland or expensive. And so you've got to change the mindset, and that's where the brand name The Thought Gym came. And the first tagline was train the mind and the body will follow, which is the tagline for my first book. And then I evolved it to train the mind and the rest will follow as I expanded. It's not really just about the physical stuff. So I started getting into that. And then
and was that at the time when you were still at the London Stock Exchange?
No, so I left the Stock Exchange in October 2010 and went on the NLP course in October, November.
Yeah.
Came up with a brand name around November.
Did you have an idea what you wanted to do when you left the Stock Exchange?
No, I didn't really. I knew that I didn't want to spend my life
in the corporate world, in that city environment?
I didn't really know. And actually...
So this was a journey that you had to go on. Yeah. Part of the NLP course was, let's go and discover myself.
Let's explore. I mean, that led me down the path of personal development. And then I started meeting lots of entrepreneurs. Meet lots of people doing different things, whether they're coaches or network marketers or whatever it is.
So you went on that path. You didn't know where that path was going to take you.
No, but actually I went back into the corporate world and I started working for Sainsbury's. And this is where kind of it does tie into the story, is that, so I started getting involved. So around January I went on a course, and at that time I wasn't working. So I left the stock exchange in October. I started at Sainsbury's in February. But in January I went on this course. I met this, or the guy who was running the course was like he was 60. He looked 35. He hadn't had a cold in 27 years. He had amazing energy. He was on stage 14 hours a day, 2 days straight. And I was like, what is going on there? And spoke to some of the testimonial people that he had on there. And they were like, well, you know, he had a health course that he was selling for like £3,000 for like 3 days. And then the guy was saying, well, he basically brings on this guy who wrote this book. And I was like, what's the name of the book? And it was like £5 on Amazon or £3,000 over here. So I was like, okay, I'll rather take the £5 Amazon job. So I read the book, kind of started to go into the subconscious a little bit. It was around health and things. And then I started at the Sainsbury's head office, and I started as a contractor. So I was only, you know, I was paid a day rate, and you're paid as an expert as well. And so I recognised pretty quickly, you know, you can't, not that I ever did call in sick at the stock exchange or anything, but maybe I had 4 sick days in 6 years or something. But like, you're not going to get paid if you're sick. You're not going to get paid if you don't do your job well. You need to add value beyond that of a normal employee, because if your contract comes to an end, they don't renew it. So I wanted to do that, and at the same time, so I recognised that I need, that health was my greatest wealth, and that, yes, you can have all the strategies, the tools, the techniques in the world to get to your goals, but if you don't have the energy, then it's pointless. Mm-hmm. And I, as you know, did physics and astrophysics at university. Fundamental thing of nature is about energy, okay? Everything is made up of energy. Or Nikola Tesla said, if you want to understand the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And he was a smart guy, to the point that when Einstein was asked by reporters once what it felt like to be the smartest guy in the world, he said, I don't know, ask Nikola Tesla. So I really love that quote. So, you know, you've got to listen to these guys. They're all about energy, E equals MC squared. So you have to have energy to start a business, okay? If you're an entrepreneur, or if you're a sidepreneur or whatever it is, you know, you're working 9 to 5 in your normal job, you're trying to create your other job, but you've got the kids, you've got, you know, the dinner, the cleaning. Where's that energy going to come from? So I talk about being superhuman, but what I mean is being an everyday superhuman. Yeah, there are superhuman feats out there, like holding your breath for 26 minutes, like, which is a world record, and, you know, swimming in ice water and all of this sort of stuff. But that's not the goal for most people. The goal for most people is to live their lives and do the things that they want to do. And it's like, you know, go shopping with a significant other for 8 hours on a Saturday and not feel totally knackered. Mm. Write the book in the evening, you know, do your YouTube videos and your podcast and all that. That's what I mean by being a superhuman, is that an everyday superhuman. You know, because it's not even about doing things like marathons or climbing Mount Kilimanjaro or anything like
everyday.
That.
Everyday.
Yeah, because anyone can do those things. You can put yourself like on a path for 6 weeks or 6 months, get that goal, and then what? What about the rest of your life? Yeah, so you've got to be doing it all the time. And so I was at Sainsbury's, and I wanted to write my first book. I wanted to join this thing called Toastmasters so I can learn to speak, because I started going to these personal development events, and they were saying, oh, you know, if you want to be a coach, then why speak one-to-one with everyone? Why speak one-to-many so that people know about your services? Sure. Why not have your book do your marketing for you and show yourself as an expert? So it's like, okay, I want to write, I want to do this, start a YouTube channel, you know, all of these things. And so you needed the energy, and I was like, okay, what is it that these high-performing people were doing? And I'd made tons of changes, about 30 changes in a month, and then about 100 or more changes over the course of a year. And after about...
These were personal changes.
So these might be things like, you know, stopping to drink caffeine and tea and coffee, because I was like, okay,
so
well,
cut sugar or cut this, yeah, or so that. Like, it was just fundamental changes.
It was basically,
or even little changes.
Little changes, like small changes sometimes,
but positive changes.
Yeah,
that was the whole point.
Perceivably by me, positive changes. So I would see, and I would say, well, you know what? 8 out of 10 people that I respect or that I deem successful are doing this. 7 out of 10 people are doing this. 9 out of 10 people are doing this. So you've got to follow the patterns, as Jim Rohn used to say.
Yeah, success don't reinvent the wheel.
Well, success leaves clues, right? So if 9 out of 10 people are having a green smoothie, okay, what's all this stuff about green smoothie? 8 out of 10 people who are successful are talking about writing a gratitude log. Okay, so I started doing these things, whether it was a gratitude log, a green smoothie, a green juice, not watching the news, creating morning routines, you know, meditation, you know, all of these things. And so that started in 2011, so that was the kind of catalyst year. And around 2013, I was like, I've been doing this for a few years now, there must be some pattern to it. I took a massive sheet of paper apart. I wrote down all the things I changed in my life on that piece of paper, and then I started circling them, and I recognized reasonably quickly that they fell into 4 areas, and that everything was in one of these 4 areas that all deemed towards health, vitality, and energy. And I wasn't the first to discover this. When I suddenly came up with this, I suddenly saw other models which looked similar. Because when we talk about health and energy, a lot of people think of 2 things, maybe 3 things. They might think diet, and they might think exercise. They go, right, I've got to sort my diet out, I've got to sort my exercise out. And now maybe they're thinking about sleep.
Okay. I was going to mention sleep.
Yeah, as sometimes people consider it the third pillar. Matthew Walker, who's one of the sleep experts, and rightly so, considers it almost like the foundational piece, because the other two just won't work anyway without sleep. But there's a 4th component, well, actually there's, which is more important, like I talked about the thought gym, is about the mindset, because most people know that a Big Mac is not as healthy as an apple, okay? It doesn't matter what you know, it matters what you do. So why is it that we make changes, and we can't stick to them? And this is where like NLP can help with making those changes, but yeah, we know what to do, we just don't do what we know. So why is that? And so the mindset needs to shift. And the mindset is, you know, your psychology, your beliefs, your values, your emotions around things. So they're kind of 4 areas, but they're not complete. So I developed this model called the Leadership Beat Model, which is around the 4 areas that are needed, or the 4 forces to health, vitality, and energy. And we can talk about those if you want.
Just quickly, why do you think fundamentally as humans we fail at that critical choice where we know that that's going to be bad and that's going to be good for us, but we'll still go for the bad option? You know, just as an example, you see, you know, you hear about doctors all the time telling their patients you should give up smoking and you should give up drinking, and yet they're often smoking and drinking themselves.
Yeah,
I'm not saying all doctors smoke and drink, but you get my point.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, doctors used to prescribe cigarettes, I think, and endorse cigarettes back in the 50s when they were, you know, you go through some of the
old... I never knew that.
Yeah, you go through some of the old adverts, right?
Wow.
Yeah, you know, doctors smoke Camels or whatever, that sort of stuff going on, you know? And there was a whole marketing around that, and interestingly, those same people are now the ones that are doing marketing for, like, the junk foods and the processed foods and all these things. So, but anyway, that's a whole other can of worms to open. Yeah. But fundamentally, what happens is we create neural connections and habits in our head over, you know, the course of time through repeated exposure to certain things like advertising and whatnot. And when we're kids, especially, we're really susceptible to things. And most of our decisions each day, we think we're in control of them, but we're not. The subconscious mind, the unconscious mind, is in control of them. So if you think of the mind a bit like an iceberg, what we see above the surface of the water is what we perceive as the iceberg, which is the conscious mind, and we think that's driving things. But actually what's stronger, more powerful, and supporting the conscious mind is the unconscious mind, which is where your beliefs and your values are stored, where your habits arise from. And your unconscious mind ultimately wants to keep you safe in some way, even if it's in a weird way. So that dragging that cigarette is because it doesn't want you to feel out of place and anxious when you're meeting people. And so, by example, so you want to feel confident or you want to feel relaxed, and so it's going to keep driving that cigarette. Or because, you know, smoking is, you know, you might know it's bad for you, but somewhere deep down you know, all the cool kids at school used to smoke. James Dean used to smoke. You know, so you have this belief that smoking is cool, even that, you know, and people like look really cool with that cigarette hanging out the mouth, and they're like, you know, James Dean, that classic poster. I always think they should redo those posters with like an asparagus hanging out of his mouth instead, or something like that, to like sex up vegetables. So yeah, fundamentally, the unconscious mind is at work here. So we can go into more of that if you want in a second. So yeah, like I said, we're driven by unconscious decisions. We have like 90,000 thoughts a day. Most of them are unconscious, and they're driven by what's called the unconscious mind, which is where things are stored that we're not really aware of. Like, we don't need to learn. We don't need to think about, you or I now, really, how to drive. Okay, once in a while, when we were like 16, 17, we became consciously aware that we weren't able to do it. And eventually, after like several lessons, it became very unconscious because we had lots of repetition to like go clutch, gear, mirror, signal, maneuver, all of that. So now we can talk, we can listen to the radio, we can do all of that whilst driving, whereas before we couldn't. Because what happens is when we do certain activities, our neurons and our brain chemicals, if you like, fire together, okay, and they create a pathway. This pathway is a bit like if you've ever run in, or walked in the park and seen where runners run, and they may be running on the grass, and you see, in fact, actually, even at the festival, I was at the weekend, where the cars are driving on the field over and over and over, it creates a pathway. The more times you drive over that field, the stronger that pathway becomes. And so when that pathway becomes super strong, we end up creating these habits and these routines that drive us, even though we know that actually we should, you know, it's a better way to go a different way. It's so strong. And you can't, unfortunately, break habits because those pathways remain there. But you can create stronger ones by doing other things to repeat it. And so we may not even realize that when we walk past that bakery, that smell reminds us of a time when we were 12 and our gran used to make these amazing breads, and we're feeling low and we want to
feel go better, back, have feel that nice feeling of whatever it was. So fundamentally, that unconscious mind is incredibly powerful and incredibly sort of almost responsible for a lot of the actions, behaviors that we do, but we have no idea about.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Now, with the business, when you started to sort of go down that path of sort of discovery, and you were sort of identifying, oh wow, these are the sort of key things that key, you know, high performance people were actually doing, and you started modeling that effectively to sort of think about, you know, helping others.
Yeah.
How did you find that sort of process in terms of figuring out how to package effectively, you know, all these different things that are in the ether, and then sort of bringing it together, and
I'm still going out and trying to
package it as a product.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's still something I'm wrestling with. I think that the biggest challenge I've got with what I'm doing, in a way, is that, you know, everyone talks about niching, micro niching, or niching if you're an American listener out there, and just pick one thing almost where it's easy to say, right, I'm the expert on making green smoothies. If you want to know about green smoothies, you come to me.
And just to let you guys know, Harry is awesome at making green smoothies.
Yeah. Normally when I come down here, I bring my blender with me.
It's got like rucksack blenders and
all sorts of stuff.
Nuts and stuff. Yeah.
But I guess my challenge is that because I've got diverse interests, even when I was at school, you know, I wasn't like super dedicated to football, because I like football and I like basketball and I like this. So I never got to a super high level in any of those, which is the problem. Like, you spread your attention. An acronym for focus is follow one course until success. Okay. And I tend to like lots of things, which is why I invent. Because the thing is, people do want that snappy thing. Right now in corporations, it's about mindfulness. It's like, mindfulness is going to solve all my problems. Now, mindfulness is great. It's something I practice, I talk about, I teach. It's actually one of the taglines now. My shirt is my mindset, nutrition, and mindfulness.
Yeah.
So it's great. That being said, everyone wants that silver bullet. And the thing is, there's many things that go into it.
Is it silver bullet or golden bullet?
I think it's the...
Whatever.
Whatever it is. But there's not one bullet.
Unfortunately, no, there isn't.
As a bad
there
acronym,
isn't.
It's probably a whole machine
it's
gun
like
full of
them. It's like a machine gun firing...
Yeah, which is not probably the best analogy I've got out there. But But the thing is, there's many things. So yeah. I was like, you know, I'm interested in all these things. All of these things are valuable. And that becomes hard in terms of marketing, yeah. which is, I guess, where...
People do want quick fixes, don't they? They want to go, I want to take that one pill, or yeah. I want this one course, or I want this... Just tell me how it's going to make my life different, how I'm going to make money, how I'm going to... Like, yeah. now.
So I guess
and that's the challenge we've got as a society, isn't it?
So I didn't know, going back to your thing, is like how... What I was about, what I was marketing when I started. Even with the when I started with the brand name, The Thought Gym.
Yeah.
I saw my first business cards the other day, and I had like... You know, weight management, smoking cessation, increased confidence. Now, these are like three vastly different things, yeah? And so it was all a bit muddled. And then as I started to discover this beat model philosophy, I was like, okay, this is the philosophy I need to share with the world. But, you know, and then I guess I packaged it into one word, which is superhuman, which is like, okay, everything I'm doing is to drive superhuman. Mm. Again, it's a little bit vague.
It's like high level.
Yeah, some people might take offense going, oh, what's all this superhuman? Like, my mum must still think likes the word superhuman, which is why I have to explain it as everyday superhuman, what it is. But I'd say I was still figuring it out. I'm still figuring out, in a way, how I position it to, like, sometimes companies. Now, if they see me speak and they have conversations, maybe they hear this, they understand a little bit more, then it's like, okay, yeah, this is good. Ultimately, it's about enabling their employees to be higher performing employees, yes. to have the energy and drive.
It's helping people be the best they possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. So in answer to your question, it's a work in progress. I think it's easier sometimes when you say, okay, well, like, I'm a yoga teacher. That's what I'm doing. And then for people who are looking for a yoga teacher, they search. Sure. Or even going more granular, like, you know my mum or who was saying, oh, how does a course on handstands, online course on handstands, like, sell thousands? Because you've got a very targeted audience who are looking to do handstands, and they're already on the path to bettering themselves in a physical capacity, and therefore they're going to invest in learning how to do a handstand, maybe. So I guess my biggest downfall, in a way, is having that dispersed knowledge, but also I think that the future will belong to the expert generalist, if that makes sense, because... As people get so narrow into one singular thing, you know, I remember hearing this at 16, and maybe this is what subconsciously went into my mind, that you, initially you're no good at lots of things, then you become good at a few number of things, then you become really good at even smaller things, and then eventually become an expert in nothing, okay? You know, you might be that genetic gene splicer, so that's what you know. But then, like, you could be the yoga teacher who knows yoga. You could be the meditation teacher who's fat and overweight, but you know the meditation thing. And the thing is, a bit like, I mean, I listened to some of Tim Ferriss's stuff, and he's managed to navigate this world where he is kind of like the expert generalist in his stuff. And so I guess that's, to my point, is it becomes harder to market in a way, because it's like, what is he all about? Okay. Is it about meditation? Is it about exercise? Is it about food? Is it about breathing? Is it about mindset?
It's about all of those things.
It's about all of those, but like, I guess I would say the brand is the Thought Gym. It all starts with the mindset. And once you change the mindset, like, if I can change the mindset of someone, then it's going to be easier to get them to eat the apple than the Big Mac. Mm. Okay, it's not to say you never eat the Big Mac. It's not to say you never make choices that are maybe not in line with your highest values, but it means that you do this with awareness.
Yeah.
Okay, based on the opportunities and the experience and circumstances around you, you may have to make choices which you wouldn't normally do.
You know what? You're almost like, I think, if I could sort of frame it like this, the financial advisor for the mind. And it's not like a you know, take this one tablet or take this one course or take this one lecture or coaching course I can give you. It's almost like, well, that's one of the whole journey.
Yeah.
And actually, to help you progress and grow as a person. You know, I'm not about doing a one course, one yeah. tablet, one golden bullet, silver bullet, whatever you want to call it. It's actually, I'm here and we've got a plan and do a process and help you grow together.
Yeah. It takes it's almost like a time.
Yeah, so it's almost like a, I guess, packaging possibly in that sort of sense with
yeah.
companies or whatever to say, look, you know, I'm not going to just go, you know, it's no point me just doing a one-off. We've got to do a whole yeah. development process.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there's absolute value to be having some short-term things, but like, just like, you know, my ideal situation is working with clients over the long term, because that's when you see changes. But equally, said, I was chatting to my friend the other day, And he was like going, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, so I gave him my latest book, which is called Working Well, which is a really short, snappy title. And in there, we talk about water content and water intake. And anyway, there's a formula for it. But ultimately, I always say, like, do the pee test, okay? See the colour of your urine, okay? It should be virtually clear. Mm. Not like maybe water clear, but virtually clear. So I got him to kind of do the pee test. This is like every time you go to the toilet sort of thing. And he buy a water bottle and drink more water. And he was like, it came back a few weeks later, and he was like, I can't believe I got like so much more energy and like blah, blah, blah. And I was like, there you go. Yeah. And now he's started to develop a gratitude practice in the morning. Although I'd been telling him to do this for years. He's been listening to an audio program telling him to do this. And then he finally went on a course and he heard another teacher say it and he decided to do it. But now, obviously, that message has to go in through different several inputs, and now he's doing it each morning, and his gratitude walks, and he's like, I'm feeling so much more positive, and I feel more energized. So sometimes little things will make that thing, but yes, you've got to recognize that these are little bricks that are going to build the house.
Sure, and it's also the repetitive message.
Yes.
Just keeping sort of reaffirming it, because it's like anything, isn't it? You hear it once, you're not necessarily going to take it as read or do anything about it, or it's... You know, marketing. You know, you're not going to buy from a brand the first time you see them.
No.
You probably need to hear them multiple times.
Well, yeah, it used to be like six or something. Now it's probably like 30 or something, because we're getting bombarded with loads of inputs. Yeah. So you do need to hear things repeatedly for different times, and also you need to be in the right frame. You know, I heard messages many times, thousands of times sometimes, before they finally sunk in. And even now, I still are hearing messages. I know they're to be true, but yet they still haven't sunk in because I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not actually doing the thing.
So what's happening with the Thought Gym? Where's the future? Where do you see it going? What's the plans?
Where I'd like to see it going, so I distribute my message through a number of means. So that's through the YouTube channel, The Thought Gym, through the books, The Thought Gym and Working Well, and the one I'm currently writing, which is on the whole philosophy. So through those two methods, but through online courses, through speaking engagements, and through training in organisations that are progressive enough to recognise that actually the health of their bottom line is a direct result of the health and vitality and energy of their employees. And ultimately, it'd be nice to get this model as their well-being framework and philosophy. So rather than just like throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks, you go, okay, we're looking at it through this lens, and everything we do is going to be around these four areas, and what can we do to support that? And then I'll have... You know, I've got a whole course content that they can take and license and whatever else. So that would be part of the future plans. You know, because I think that we're in a grip of some epidemic of all sorts of stuff, whether that's obesity or health or presenteeism at work and people just being there and not really wanting to be there, absence, people not living their passion, whatever it is. And I think we need to change that. And so my mission is to help people empower themselves to become the best versions of themselves. And, you know, I came from the corporate environment, so initially I wanted to help those people. But equally, you know, from being an entrepreneur, and you're an entrepreneur, we know that we have to, we are our business, especially at the beginning. Mm. We are our business. We're not firing on all cylinders, the business is going to suffer. And, you know, if you're a parent, you know, often you think, okay, everything is about my child. I've got to do, you know, I've got to sacrifice my own well-being for the sake of my child. And I always refer people to those safety cards in the aeroplane, okay? You can't help your child. Always put your own mask on first, as much as it pains you.
Yeah.
Because if you pass out, you're not going to help anyone.
Absolutely.
And so you've got to
make sure
that you're on point, right?
I get
so that you can help everyone else. And that comes around from the things I learn. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not superhuman. I always say I'm human as well as superhuman. Sometimes I have down days, and we work in, you know, we work in cycles and peaks and troughs. And it's the idea is that you don't, you know, need that caffeine fix in the morning to get you up. And then you need that bottle of wine in the evening to get you down. And then you need that cigarette to keep you calm. And then you need this HIIT session at the gym to get you fired up. It's like, that's too jagged, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's more about having a smooth way, and you will always be slightly off balance. I always say to people, in order to move forward in life, you have to be off balance, because in order to walk, walking is effectively controlled falling. Okay, you have to go off balance slightly in order to move forward. Okay.
Sorry, just interrupt there, but I'm a massive believer in falling flat on your face, cocking up, making mistakes, and actually getting up. Because actually, when you physically do that, if you actually fall on your face and get up, you can't help but move forward.
Yeah.
And that's just a physical fact.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key, is just not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And actually just go for it.
Yeah.
Because you'll learn and you will move forward. And you will either pivot and go in a different direction or whatever, achieve whatever
we
you're trying to achieve.
We have to fail. I mean, I always ask my students, when I do lots of stuff in schools as well, you know, who fails more, like failures or successful people? Successful people. They always fail more than people who are quote-unquote failures. And I like the acronym FAIL as well, to think of it as your first attempt in learning. Okay, we have to fail in order to learn.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting, actually, Tom, my little boy, obviously, you know.
Yeah, my godson.
Godson. And he's just like super, super competitive. And he hates to lose. And I keep on trying to sort of tell him and reaffirm that sort of point as, you know, you need to learn how to lose. You need to learn how to fail. And it's okay to fail. It's okay to lose. And I often use the analogy of Lewis Hamilton. I say, look, you know, because my boy likes Formula One and football and things like that, and Messi and whatever, Neymar and whatever.
Yeah, but, we were talking about that earlier actually, today, Neymar.
Definitely. But, you know, Lewis Hamilton loses more than he wins.
Yeah.
And he's an incredible multi, you know, four-time world champion.
Yeah.
But he'll lose more races than he wins.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fact.
Babe Ruth, the famous baseball player, most home runs out of everyone. Also the most strikeouts out of everyone, you know. Like, there's countless examples. I don't know if the books I sent you guys have those examples. But, like, when I started reading biographies about 7 years ago, I started reading more. This is one of the factors that I saw, that, you know, the average person reads maybe one book a year. The average CEO reads about 60 books a year. There's a reason, you know, the more you learn, the more you earn, as they say. And I started reading books. Biographies were brilliant because you got to learn the story behind the thing. Because at the moment, we just see the tip of the iceberg. Mm. We don't see the stuff that goes on beneath it. We see their chapter 20 and we compare it to our chapter 1 and we think, why aren't we as good as them? Or why...
100%. And I think social media has a lot of failings with that, because I think people often see the glitz, the glam, that end, you know, point, but they haven't seen the 20 years before or the 10 years before, the 5 years, whatever it is.
No, or they see the 4 minute video. It used to take me like an hour per minute that goes into a video, you know, because there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that you just don't see. And that's everywhere, you know, that's, you know, in athletics, in business, in wherever, there's always stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And so you have to remember that those failures, and reading biographies can help with that. There's some good books, but he's too young right now to read them, like Bounce and The Talent Code, or The Talent Myth or something like that, all about this idea of where you're going to just be good at something automatically. No, it's not. And actually, in fact, for your brain to create those neural connections, what happens, what wraps around the neural connections is this thing called myelin sheath. It's a bit like the copper cables with the insulation, and it keeps the signal in. In order for that myelin sheath to grow, you actually have to have almost like failed practice. Okay, this deliberate practice, it gets stronger, this myelin sheath, with not repeating successes often, but like doing things slightly wrong and then working out to how to do it slightly better next time, and that gets stronger.
Yep.
So you actually need to fail in order to succeed.
And that's the tough bit in business, of course.
Yeah.
You know, it's a journey. So what's, just last question actually, with the sort of your sort of packaging and trying to sort of enter the corporate world, how have you found that process in terms of, you know, breaking down those barriers? Because I can imagine it's going to be, I don't know, but, and part of the reason I'm interested is because at some point with my tech business, hopefully we're going to be knocking on some, you know, big doors and big players, national, international companies. And it's an interesting thing to see how you've found and what steps you've taken or how you go about sort of, you know, getting through those sort of gatekeepers who,
I guess, it's, you know, not an
speaking to the decision makers.
It's not an easy question to answer in a way, but where I've had better success is where someone has actually seen me speak or them. And that might be at like an HR conference, or even when I was doing something, I do things like maybe I did something for free and at a round table, and then you don't know who's in the audience.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, this guy's good. Or, you know, they bought a book of mine or something like that, and they've read that. So that's always the better way in, because it's not like you're knocking on doors and cold calling. I found that quite hard, and I don't know if I had much success with that. So the best success I've had so far is where there's been either an introduction, or their people have seen me, they've read a blog, a video, or they've done something. So that's that kind of marketing.
So it's more about putting yourself out there, maybe offering something.
I don't know if that's the best way. I think there's many ways, and I think maybe even phoning 100 people a day, 100 days in a row, you're gonna get the numbers. But again, still with that, you will have to have the way that you position it as value to them. What are they after? What's going to make their life easier? Because remember, they've already got a million two things on their plate. They don't need another side dish on top of it.
No.
You want to be able to take stuff away from their plate. So it's how you convey that message. And then you will have some stuff that, you know, that maybe you send them to a talk on video online that you've got, or you send them like tips on how they're going to do something easier in their business.
I think it's about doing something different as well, because they're going to be getting bombarded with phone calls, prospects, people trying to sell them something. And funny, I did a post recently about trying to think about how you can offer value to whoever you're speaking to. You know, that's the key thing. So however that is done, you know, whether it's all going to be very different for everybody. I think that's the key, is trying to do things differently and trying to provide value in some form or some
absolutely.
Way. And it's figuring out how you do that in your niche, in your area for that audience.
Yeah.
I think about probably more them than you. I think that's really critical.
Absolutely. You've got to, I always say to people, don't go out looking for friends. Go out looking to be a friend. Okay. Don't look to get, look to give.
Mm.
Okay. How can you help that person? Mm. How can you add value to their life? Mm. How can you both walk away from that conversation having felt better for having met each other?
No, definitely. Awesome. Well, listen, on that amazing, amazing sort of finale and that finish, just want to say a huge thank you for coming along and sharing your journey. It's been brilliant. It's, you know, actually some interesting things that sort of I learned as well.
Yeah, and if people want to know more and connect further, just social media, the Thought Gym, all over the place.
Thought Gym, and definitely check out
.com. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, check his books out, check his, you know, all the stuff that he does. He's amazing. So, you know, check him out. Any questions in the comments, put them in the comment section. And obviously reach out to Harry. But yeah, thanks ever so much for coming along, mate, and we'll catch you soon, buddy.
Pleasure.